Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Red Men podcast. It is the summer. The Euros are in full flow, but that doesn't mean we can't talk about the mighty Reds instead, because we're just embittered Scouse bastards and Ben. the crew we have assembled for your viewing and listening pleasure today is myself, Paul Machen, and I'm joined in the studio by Si Fletcher.
Hello, for the first time in a long time, I didn't know how to do any of this stuff. I'm normally on the other side setting it up, but I didn't know. Oh, we've got to mute the thing so we can't hear each other. Oh, right.
It was brilliant. I equated to him and we're going back to a pub, having not worked there all summer, and they changed the tills to like touchscreen, and I felt like a caveman on the bridge of the Enterprise. It was a bit like, and this does what? And Tad, you're coping all right.
We'll see how we get on.
Yeah, we'll get into it as we go along. Join us from home, the man, the legend, the resplendent in white, Mr. Chris Pajak. Hi, Chris.
Hello, everyone. How are we? Or should I say, how are we?
Oh, are we indeed? And also pretty resplendent in white as well, joining us from upstairs. We've got Ben Kelly as well. Ben, you good?
Hello, yes, I am. Thank you very much. I'm upstairs, all well and good. I've got Ross with me, although he's in his own little world. So yeah.
Yeah, be rocking out to Radio X and doing
Toby
all the
Tarrant.
Right, Sam, we are going to be discussing Liverpool's squad issues today because it's the summer. The transfer window isn't open yet, but that doesn't mean that we can't all have loads and loads and loads and loads and loads of fears. Sometimes irrational, sometimes born of a deeper anxiety based elsewhere, but you know, always centred around transfers and what Liverpool should be doing or shouldn't be doing in the transfer market. So we're going to lay as many of our fears out on the table as possible and see if we can talk through them. Maybe even feel better about one or two of them by the end, but we'll see. We've got a kickoff question this week. Comes from Stephen Muir, 1982. Says, what is your guilty pleasure with TV themes? Si Fletcher.
I don't really. Does it mean we feel guilty that we like the theme song or the theme song of a programme that we feel guilty that we like?
Well, it could be a bit of both. So, like, my general feeling is if it's something that if you got caught playing it really loud by like friends or the general public, you'd go, you'd get your head down.
I'd say a lot of TV themes are guilty pleasures in that regard. That like if you just listen to fucking Match of the Day driving your car down the road, then you're gonna look like a bit of an idiot. That, yeah. But I am actually, I do actually love a good TV theme. My favourite's Grandstand. I think Grandstand's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
Before
your time as well.
Yeah, I know. And like all the sport ones I like. I like the cricket. I like the snooker. I like the Wimbledon. I like Match of the Day. I'm into all them. There's probably some kids ones that I still like for like the nostalgia thing, like Tracy Beaker, which I loved when I was a kid. But again, I don't think I've been getting caught driving down the road listening to the Tracy Beaker theme song. Even though Stormzy did do the little M bit in Superhero, so maybe he's made it a little bit cool.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, so yeah, I'll go with Tracy Beaker.
Tracy Beaker, I like that one. Chris, what about you?
The Shoe People.
Shoe People.
This is
shoe people. It's gonna be so loud. Like the Tracy Beaker thing. I've got no idea. Chris has got no idea what Tracy Beaker is, and you guys clearly, but like, no idea. Any idea what the Shoe People is?
No.
I mean,
I like the sound of it though.
It's a bit like that. If you think of like, do you know the Paddington Peas?
I was going to say the Paddington Peas, but I have no clue what the Paddington Peas is either.
No, it's a bit like the Paddington Peas, except, you know, the shoes.
Yeah, it's good. It's cartoons.
Well, that clears that up.
The 80s was a very odd time for cartoons, to be perfectly honest. Ben, presumably the Pokemon theme?
No, I never was into Pokemon. I was I know that's going to upset quite a lot of people. I was a Nickelodeon kid, unfortunately. So, like, I've gone down the same route as Si, because Drake and Josh and iCarly, the theme tunes for them were absolute bangers. So, it'd be the pair of them. And then more recently, I like the sports ones, but there's a sitcom called New Girl that also has a very catchy tune. And it's also a very funny show. So, it's probably that one for me as well. A bit more contemporary, mine.
Zooey Deschanel.
Yeah. I've never watched it. Very funny show.
Sorry, is it possible for you to share your Spotify playlist of all the sports themes? Because, like, if you've not done that sounds like a great, great Spotify playlist, to be honest with you.
I haven't got it, but yeah, I can make one.
Yes,
he's not busy enough at the moment, you see.
I know, yeah. Hey, listen, this is the man he told me last week, he just wandered around the office for 3 hours.
wondering what to do with myself when I had an awful lot of videos to edit.
We are going to be talking about that. We're going to be talking about the Jordan Henderson documentary series a little bit later on with Si, who's been the guy pulling it all together for us. But yeah, I'm obsessed with TV themes. I created a playlist on YouTube of all my favourite ones. It goes back to 80s cartoons and stuff, and I've got my son addicted to them as well, which is cool. But there was like something like Denver the Last Dinosaur, which again you won't know, but Chris will know.
I think I might be onto it.
It's a banger, but you wouldn't want to be, you know, it's not like a windows down and the system up kind of thing, you know. You wouldn't be doing that in your low rider while you're trying to impress birds. It's Denver the Last Dinosaur, I'll definitely go with something like that, but there's tons, because you're right, TV themes are a little bit of guilty
only pleasure. Fools and Horses has got two really good ones, the intro one and the end titles one, are both really good.
Yeah, absolutely spot on. Let's see if we've got anyone. Well, people don't. Oh, yeah, there you go. We're Paul Harding saying the Fleetwood Mac F1 intro. Yeah, absolutely. Oh, yeah, spot on. Yeah, the old Top Gear theme as well. Why not? Right, we're going to dive into it. We're going to be talking about Liverpool squad issues in a moment, but we are sponsored by Redmen Picks. Those of you who played during the season will know the overriding format. It's still running through the Euros as well. The next game up is France versus Germany, which I'm sure most people will be tuning in for, but it's a free-to-play game. There's a total prize pool of £250, and all you've got to do is make your picks for each of the questions below. Click place bet to submit your entry into the contest and follow the game live with their real-time leaderboard. First place will get 125 and down from there. That's a fifth place with £12.50, which I always say is nothing to be sniffed at for just clicking a few questions. And it's as simple as this. Will Germany beat France? You're going to click yes or no. Will Germany score in the first? It will score in the second half. Will France keep a clean sheet? And so on and so forth. And it does that. There's a whole bunch of games as well, which don't show on the screen, Tom, but I'm going to read out so people have got... So there is Turkey, Italy. It was Turkey, Italy, Wales, Switzerland has already been done. Looking ahead, we've got England, Scotland coming up on Friday, Portugal, Germany, Italy, Wales, Finland, Belgium, Czech, England, Portugal, France. There's also a pay-to-play model there as well. So if you want to pay a £5 entry fee, there's a bigger prize pool that will grow with more entries, and you can enter multiple times. The free-to-play one, you can enter the once. So if you just want to have a quick, light-hearted game, then you can do that. But if you want to have bigger chances, then you can do that as well. Make sure, of course, that you've got to be 18 plus. Do be gamble aware and check out the terms and conditions in the link that will be underneath this video podcast as well. Yes, right. Sound. Si, you're a man who likes to have a good old stress about footballing matters. Liverpool heading into the summer, having had a cataclysmic season. I've asked everyone for clarity for people watching home. I've asked everyone to kind of draw up a list of three of their biggest concerns around Liverpool's squad right now. We're going to take it in turns. What have you got first up?
One of the ones I've got is still centre back, to be honest. I think we'll be going in, looking at it, you've probably got Van Dijk, Gomez, Matip, Kanate, and then maybe now Phillips. There's still question marks over whether he might move on if a good enough bid comes in for him. But the fact that you've got Van Dijk, Gomez and Matip all coming back off long-term injuries, it's whether, certainly in the first half of the season, we are going to have enough cover, because there's a good chance that they will pick up little injuries and be ruled out. And the last thing you want is, say, Van Dijk gets ruled out and then you're relying on Gomez to come in and play more games than he should be playing in his redevelopment.
Yeah.
When he's not ready to, and it is a bit of a worry for me.
I think that's a massive one, isn't it, Chris? You know, because I think on paper Liverpool have done they're taking a brilliant positive first step, just going boxer centre half, no problem. There's that little there was that rumour doing the rounds that like Kabach had kept all his Liverpool headers and all that kind of stuff, and Liverpool were putting tweets out with him in the Liverpool kit, you know, congratulating him on being picked for Turkey and all that kind of stuff. That Liverpool are going to end up putting a low ball bid in for him, but I can get behind size thing. I'm not sure that it would be as pressing for me. But do you agree with that fear?
Well, looking fears, it's hard to disagree with, isn't it? I mean, it's not as an opinion or anything like that. It's a genuine fear. So for me, probably my fear around the centre backs is that they just don't come back the same players. That's what my fear of those players are. I mean, when you've been out for a year and you've been at the absolute peak, can you come back and be exactly the same? And how long does it take you to get there? And are we still going to be in with a chance of the title? Is my fear around maybe Van Dijk, Joe Gomez. My fear is he's had one too many big injuries and he's not going to come back. And Konate's not part of the system and he's not well integrated yet and all that type of stuff. So it's a fear that I can certainly get behind, of course.
And also, let's not forget, Chris, that we've signed, you know, Konate, but also, we've literally had every single centre-back at the club injured at one point or another. So it's all well and good going. We can look at the size points all spot on, but this is also based on a world where Konate doesn't get injured as well.
His injury record is not great.
Well, yeah, and look, herein lies the path to madness, of course. But, you know, there is that as well. We shouldn't underestimate that Liverpool's issues with injuring centre-halves might not have ended just because the season, because we passed an arbitrary date in the calendar.
Yeah, well, that's it, isn't it? We've essentially had the centre-back mange for the last fucking 18 months or whatever. And you don't want them to continue with that, do you?
Yeah, yes, absolutely. I mean, I think it's an interesting point, Ben, that we're focused on, because the three lads who are coming back, they're coming back from in different stages of their careers. You know, Virgil van Dijk's coming back as probably the best footballer, pound for pound, probably the best human being that's ever lived, and he's coming back from that kind of situation. You know, but it's a cruciate knee injury, which we know will take something away. Matip's coming back at a similar sort of age bracket, albeit one who's been plagued with little injuries throughout his time. And Gomez is coming back as a young lad with all his best years still potentially ahead of him, but another one who's had nothing but big injuries all the time. They're not coming back in the same way. They might all return to training on the, you know, next week or 2 weeks time or whatever it is they come back. They might all be starting, but they're all coming at different circumstances, so we don't know what we're getting back from them and how long it's going to take them to come close to the peak again.
Yeah, and we've never really had to deal with this before on this scale, in the sense of, I mean, Van Dijk never gets injured anyway. But, like, even when they do, and they do have little niggles, even Gomez, they all come back and they all pretty much just hit the ground running again. But they've never really been out for this long. Matip's the best example. Whenever Matip's out, if he's out for 2, 3, 4 weeks at a time, he comes back, he's just the same player, he slots in. And that's why, like, I've never been too bothered about Matip's injuries, because you know he's going to come back and he's going to be the same player. And you know, you're not going to have any issues with him. But now he's been out since January, and it's going to be at least August until we see him again. You know, if he's fit for the start of the season. So that's my concern. And then, you know, it's the same with signings in a way. I mean, there's a few signings that we've had that have had to be blooded in, but the majority again have just been fine. They've come in and they've done really well straight from the off. But we can't guarantee that with everybody. So if it does take Konate a little bit of time, and you know, I'm not convinced that Joe Gomez is even going to be fit for the start of the season. I think Van Dijk is. So you're going to have Van Dijk, you're going to have, once again, an inconsistent Joel Matip. You're going to have Konate, who doesn't know the system. And again, that's it. You know what I mean? So we are still a little bit short, and it does bother me, yeah.
Yeah, well done, Shai. I now feel really upset. That's great. Yeah. That's how we've done that really well there. You're right, though. There's no way. And right now, and this is one of those things, is that I think these are all perfectly valid concerns over this thing, aren't they? We can't know until that first pre-season game comes and you see Van Dijk's playing, lined up, and he's playing. You know what I mean? Not like he's being eased back into those kind of situations or anything other. Until we have more info, we're right to have an air of concern over it.
Yeah, no, and I'm not saying we need to go out and sign a £15-20 million centre back, because I think the money would be better.
I just don't think anyone wants to see Fabinho at centre half again. Which worst case scenario, You can still see that happening.
I mentioned the 5 cent. I didn't mention Reece Williams there. We don't know what's going to be happening with him. I wouldn't be surprised if what they do is to keep him around until January and say, look, we might need you to drop in here if we need to give someone a rest. Someone picks up a little injury, and then we'll send you out on loan to maybe a Premier League team, maybe a Championship team. They could do a similar thing with Nat Phillips if we get an offer in for him. Say, look, we really need you to do us a solid there. Hopefully, you can still get your move in January or next summer, but we need you to stick around because we need the cover at the minute.
And I wonder how the fixture list comes out Friday, Wednesday morning, I should say, Chris, and it makes you wonder whether, you know, if your opening three fixtures are Man City, Chelsea, and you know Tottenham or something, you know, you know what I mean? Like it's brown trousers time. But if you're opening the campaign with Crystal Palace, Burnley, and Brighton or something like that, then there's a world where I'm not saying I'm comfortable with this particularly, but if you had to start the season how you ended the season, you know what, in Nat Phillips and Reece Williams, you could get by if you really had to. I don't think any of us would want us to face that situation, but they have at least proven themselves at that sort of level of football.
Yeah, listen, if we start the season against any teams and they're the two lads that are available, obviously that says that Konate is not going to be available to start season. The likelihood is he probably is going to be. So I'll change it to Konate, Phillips. I'm fine with that, by the way.
Yeah.
As long as I know that it's like 3 weeks or 4 weeks that we've got to get through. And I don't care what teams it is, to be honest with you. I think Phillips has been that good that he's allayed all of those fears around what teams he plays against. And Konate, you know, that one would be, I wouldn't want to see Konate against the City because I've not seen a Konate, if you know what I mean. Like, I'd rather see him against someone who's not going to attack the shit out of us. So that's preferable there. But look, as long as it's not like 6 weeks or something like that, I'm fine with that because Liverpool have shown that they can find a way to win. And when the pressure was on last season, we turned it up and we finished the season the best team in the league. But that's what I want us to start as this season, because I think it's massively important that you sort of put your foot to the floor and just stream away as fast as you can and kill everyone's resolve before Christmas.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. Chris, while we've got you, do you want to hand us your first fear of the summer?
Somebody buying Haaland or a Kane or a Sancho or an Mbappe in our league and us not. Which sounds mad, but, you know, if City buy a Haaland or a Harry Kane, I think you've got to sort of go toe-to-toe with them on that type of a transfer, because they won the league by 18 points or whatever it was last season. And if they buy Harry Kane, I think they've bagged 40 goals. Like, that's how many goals I think he'll score for them. Equally, a Haaland or Mbappe or Jadon Sancho, Man United, you know, they finished above us. I think we're still better than them. But they closed the gap massively. So it's almost, it's not a squad fear, but it is at the same time, because I think one of the other, maybe two of the other teams are going to go absolute balls out and buy someone like that.
This, Ben, is I think Chris has hit what will be the biggest touch point for Liverpool fan meltdowns on social media over the summer, is if one of those big boys moves, and at the moment it looks like Sancho's the most likely, because that's just a matter of Man United meeting the valuation, I think, at this point. And I'm not sure it's necessarily, you know, the fact that it's Man United, I'm not as arsed about, because they've been doing that with the big name players for a few years. It's not really gotten them anywhere. But I take Chris's point there. If other teams are making big moves and Liverpool aren't making big moves, whether it's founded or not, that will be what we see loads of people losing their heads over.
Yeah, you know, what I would say there is that there's a long way to go. I mean, I think these things won't be finished until either the Euros has finished or England's involvement in the Euros has finished regarding Sancho and Kane. Sancho is an interesting one because at the moment he can't get in the England squad. So I understand he's a very, very good player. But, you know, he was left out on Sunday. Clearly, that maybe he's not as rated as highly by Gareth Southgate, a man working with him very closely, as the likes of Sterling and Grealish. And
I mean, to be fair, it's not a great barometer, given that he doesn't rate Trent Alexander-Arnold, but carry on.
Yeah, but you know, there's other players that I'm saying that are playing in our league. That, you know, why wouldn't you have Jadon Sancho on the bench? You know what I mean? I'm not saying that he's crap on the back of that, but, you know, it seems like a strange one to me. When it comes to throwing £80 million at Jadon Sancho, I don't know if that's the one that's going to hurt me the most, but what would hurt me is Harry Kane going to Manchester City. I think he is absolutely, if he can stay fit, he is at, he's, I think he's better than Robert Lewandowski. I think he's absolutely clinical. And I think that if he's got a team around him with a player like a Kevin De Bruyne, if he's got wingers like Raheem Sterling with him, if he's got players like Bernardo Silva and Phil Foden alongside him, that absolutely terrifies me. If they didn't win the Champions League this year, I'd put a lot of money on them doing it next year if they had Harry Kane, because all they achieved this year, they did it without a proper number nine. They've got Jesus, who isn't quite up to the standard, but you know, they're playing Foden in a false nine, they're playing, you know, Bernardo Silva there, they're playing the main source of the goal was Ilkay Gundogan playing further forward, and then decided not to do that in the Champions League final for some reason. But it had a proper number nine, like a world-class number nine like Harry Kane, and that is trouble for everybody else. We might as well pack up and go home.
Well, we said, we've been saying this, it's got Kane to City, he's got very Van Persie to Man United vibes about it, of like, you're not getting 5 years of him being the best centre forward on the planet, but it might only take two, another title and a Champions League, and you've made
Well, the Champions League, especially if he wins them a Champions League, then he's paid for himself, no matter what they pay for him, because we all know how much a Champions League win would mean to Manchester City. Yeah, it'd worry me. I still think we could go toe-to-toe with them over the course of the season. I think, you know, Liverpool have shown that they're capable of winning pretty much every game for the rest of this, for a full season. Yeah. So we can do it.
That's to say, and that's why I made the point about it. It's very much like, it's a perfect Twitter touch point where you realise that, and I always make this point, and this is not to say that people in their 40s and 50s don't get wound up about it, but people in their teens and 20s get wound up at these things slightly more because of the FIFA generation, where if you see a world-class player moving, it's the good example of this is, look at last summer, everyone wanted Timo Werner and nobody would have chosen Jota over Werner. I mean, I say nobody, you take my point on that, I'm being broad for the sake of arguments. Liverpool missing out on Timo Werner seemed like a catastrophe because he was the name.
Yeah.
He was the one everyone wanted.
Been flirting with Liverpool for ages. Klopp had even been flirting with him a little bit. Yeah. And it just seemed, we'll be getting Werner, and it looked like an absolute disaster when we didn't. Maybe Werner would have been brilliant for Liverpool this season. It's impossible to know, isn't it? But what I do know is Jota, in the time he's been on the pitch, has been brilliant for Liverpool. So I'm glad he's signed for us. And I think if Liverpool don't go for a big name, but they want a forward, I trust them to sign the right one, because they've shown with the transfer record that they get it right.
Oh no, 100%. And I think it's just one of them, isn't it? Because I just think it'd be nice, wouldn't it? More than anything else. I mean, from my perspective, I'm sure I think you feel the same. It, you know, if it would just be nice for Liverpool to be in them conversations. You know, and I'm not saying Harry Kane, we've had this before. Harry Kane would probably be terrific for Liverpool because he's terrific. You know, but it'd be nice just for, you know, we're just so rarely in those chats for the biggest names, you know, and Jota, as I say, is just another one of those examples. We had this on the Scotland watch along yesterday. You know, we wanted Goethe because Goethe was the name, and we got Mane, and, you know, people wanted Brandt, and everyone had their eyes all over Julian Brandt, and we got Salah. Sai's right, our track record proves it, but there is just something dead exciting about being linked with and buying established world-class players.
There is, but it's not actually the established world-class players that I'm interested in, though. There's two names on you know, that I mentioned at the start of this, in Haaland and Mbappe, that are as much a dead cert in football, barring injuries, as I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Like, Ben's right about Santo. Santo's career could go one way or the other, and I guess it's going to go up, but I don't consider him a dead cert. I don't consider Harry Kane, with his injury record, although he doesn't miss loads of games at a time, a complete dead cert, although I do in a City side if he plays. But Mbappe and Haaland, I think, those two stand on their own in world football at the age that they are. And I think if you get them, you've got probably the two best players in football tied down for the next 5 years. They're the heir apparent to Ronaldo and Messi, as I see it, and I don't see anybody else getting there and being at that level. So as much as I'd love Liverpool to be involved, I'm also the Bayern Munich side of just don't want anyone else in the league to have them either, because I genuinely believe that they're dead. If they want to move outside of England, I'm all right with that. I'm okay with that. I'll be disappointed. But if those two moved to England and Liverpool didn't make a move, that's what I'm scared of, because I just see that whoever buys those players are just like quids in for years.
Yeah, no, I completely agree with that. I think that's a really interesting one.
Do you think we might?
Well,
do you think we might go in for them?
Yeah. Not this season. I think if they stay at their clubs another year, there's a potential where Liverpool might, because I think they want them, but I just don't know whether we're in a position this year to do that.
I agree.
It's a long shot.
Well, yeah, it's one of those things, isn't it, where I think the notion of them is sound, and I think this idea that, and look, if you're sitting there going, and there's almost no point drilling up a story where we do it because it's so unlikely. Yeah. But every now and again, we just are surprised by Liverpool's approach. We think we've got it all pegged, and then they go out and do something completely.
Going Santiago, 30-year-old Thiago. Completely.
That's a great example of it, you know, and all these ideas where, you know, and the people who simplify it down to FSG equals bad, FSG don't spend, like, the work's begun on the Anfield Road expansion this week. You know what I mean? Yeah. All the things are taken over the club are still taking strides forward. It feels massively unlikely that Liverpool go and get an Mbappe who's going to cost upwards of 100 million and he's going to be your biggest, he's going to break your wage budget at the same time in a world where we're already the second biggest wage players in the league already.
Yeah, the wages thing's a big thing. You're going to have to pay them £250,000-£300,000 a week because someone else will.
Yeah.
And they'll go to them otherwise, and then it's a knock-on effect of that. Then you have to increase Salah's wages. We need to be offering all of our main players. They're all running out of contract in the next couple of years. They all need to be getting offered contracts. And if you bring in Mbappe or Haaland and pay them £300,000, that makes them negotiations an awful lot harder. Yeah. So I can see the negative effects of it. But I think FSG will have had a bit of a wake-up call with last season.
Yeah,
we properly could have not ended up in the Champions League next season, and what could have happened. Yeah. Maybe that's made them go, look, maybe we do need to invest in the team a little bit more to stop the risk of that happening again. Because how much money do you lose if you don't get in the
Champions League? Look, you're right, and I'm not having a pop at you in this, but it's always that notion of they don't invest in the team. In the last 12 months, we bought Jota, Thiago and Konate.
Yeah.
We bought three lads for the first 11. They just need to keep doing that. We just can't have another summer like the two summers previous to it where we kind of went, okay, no, this squad's fine. It doesn't need much. Just briefly, I'll just, because we run out of time, so I don't think we'll have time to get through three figures each. But I'll come to Ben in a second. But you just touch on your one there, the contracts thing. And that my fear on that is that I don't think we'll lose anyone that we want to keep. Like, we're not going to lose Virgil. I don't think we'll lose Hendo. You know, there's a few players in there. We're obviously seeing contracts starting to be rolled out. But my slight fear is you go and do all the contract stuff and then all of a sudden, what have you got left to spend? And then, so you have a summer where you've tied that, because you need to, we did this on the Director of Football show, you've got to tie Van Dijk down, you've got to tie Fabinho down, you've got to tie Henderson down. And when you've done that, your wage budget's gone up. Salah, definitely. Your wage budget's gone up, but you've not actually improved your squad. You've just settled your squad. You've just guaranteed your squad. And what does that, are we still able to then go and do what else needs to be done if we're doing that in the same summer? It's a slight fear of mine. Ben, what you got?
My fear is that we've let 40 games a season at least go for free in Gini Wijnaldum, and we're like, what on earth are we going to do about that? Because he's gone away, and he plays a different role for the Netherlands, but watching him for the Netherlands the other night be who he was, I was like, oh, that was just so sad. And knowing that PSG are going to have him and they might even use him that way. And I understand that he's done a really good job for Klopp, but it just made me really like sentimental about how good he's been for Liverpool over the last few years. And I just think whatever's happened at Liverpool, I think it's an absolute disaster that we've let him go. Because obviously, you know, around the fact that, you know, the story is that maybe we didn't offer him the length of contract that he wanted or whatever. And PSG have come and done that. I think now, you know, we need to shift our sort of perception of how old players are and when, how long they're good for in a way. You know, for me, Wijnaldum's around 30. And I think that, again, it might be down to the FIFA generation or whatever, but I think a lot of people kind of switch off to players when they turn 30 and go, oh, you know, that's it, or is it the back end of his career, whatever. I know Cristiano Ronaldo's Cristiano Ronaldo, but he's 37 years old and he's still captaining the national team and he's still scoring loads of goals for Juventus now. He's an extreme example of how good players can be at that age.
He's 37 years old.
But James Milner's another example of, you know, if you really fucking look after yourself, you can keep going, you can keep going. Gini Wijnaldum's got at least 5 years at the top level left in him. Yeah. I think it's an absolute disaster that we've let him go for free when he gives us 40 games a season and he's there every week. And and I think you need to sign somebody.
It was 51 last year. So,
I think whoever you bring in, it's not gonna be cost effective for us because we're gonna have to spend to bring in a decent replacement for him. I know Curtis Jones is there, but they're not the same players. And I think we dropped the massive clangor with it. I just think what were we being petty over another year? Were we offering him 2 years and he wanted three? You know what I mean? It all doesn't quite make sense to me. And I think, you know, overall, the next contract would have been the one to be stingy on. This wasn't the one.
Yeah, no, I think that's all perfectly valid. My only thing about it, the Dutch thing, I think is dead funny because I watched the second half of the Holland Ukraine game and I saw the Holland lineup and I was like, who the fuck are these?
Yeah, who the fuck are all these?
Yeah. And this, with the risk of falling into the famous Jay Pearson trap of saying I don't know who they are, and then it turns out they're all world class stars. I genuinely looked at it and went, I don't think that's quite. I don't think he plays as a 10 for the top sides in Europe. You know what I mean? No. Gini Wijnaldum. I think he's good. I really like Gini. And I agree. I think he's definitely, there's no reason why when James Milner's still able to get on the pitch and have an impact, Gini Wijnaldum, who's years younger than him, can't do the same. But I also think we had conversations during the season. And this can be counter-argued both ways. I don't think in a normal season Gini Wijnaldum plays as many games for us.
No.
And maybe we're not as missing his impact. I think he was meant to be faded out, but he wasn't.
But it goes to show that he's there. When everyone else was falling apart around him, he was there playing every single game for us. And I don't think he had his best season for us. I think there was, in that bad spell, I don't think he was great, but he was still there. He was still a man on the pitch. When
it was the most important quality of anyone last season was literally being able to put to take to the field.
And now it's gone. I completely agree with pretty much everything Ben said there. And we are going to have to replace him. I know there was talk James Pearce was saying that maybe it's not 100% priority, but I think we are going to have to replace them games.
Because what it does, Chris, is it's you're back into this world of you're hoping, and it's a bit like the centre half situation. And this is provided on whether we get bids in for various players. But until we have until someone buys Keita or Oxlade-Chamberlain, they're in the squad. So you need to fill Gini Wijnaldum's games with more Fabinho in midfield, more Henderson in midfield, more Curtis Jones, more Naby Keita, and more Oxlade-Chamberlain. And that goes to what my biggest fear is. Has Jordan Henderson got 40 or 50 games in him? Because he hasn't had it for a very long time because he's had his own injury problems. Curtis Jones is 20 years old. Oxlade-Chamberlain's had lots of big injuries, and Naby Keita, he's become a bit of an in-joke with us for his inability to take to the field. So that's the knock-on impact is that. That's where my fear comes from.
Yeah, and rightfully so. I did a show last Friday on YouTube talking about why Liverpool needed to bolster their midfield options. So it's a fear that I 100% share. Our midfielders missed 95 games last season between them, right? Between seven lads. Fabinho, Henderson, Thiago, Keita, Ox, Jones and James Milner. Fabinho missed 11. Henderson only missed 7, believe it or not. Thiago missed 21. Keita missed 23. Ox missed 20. Kurt Jones didn't miss a game. And James Milner missed 13. Gini Wijnaldum's missed 11 since 16-17. Right.
Yeah.
So just let that sort of sink in there for you for one. So that's what we're talking about. We're talking about a midfield that has not only misses loads of games, but Henderson's 31 this week or next week, I think it is. You've got James Milner, who's 35. You've got Thiago, who's 30 years old. And you've got Ox and Keita, who missed between them 43 games last season. I mean, where are the games coming from? I think Ben's absolutely spot on. And it's not as simple as, oh, he's missed 51, so you need 51 games, because I think this is where it gets mixed up slightly. Like Fabinho probably played 20 at centre back, so there's 20 back from the 51, so there's actually 31. And Henderson probably played a handful of games, so there you're actually down to less than
20. Thiago was out for a while.
30. Yeah, Thiago missed 23 games or 21 games, something like that. So if you can fill the centre back positions, our midfielders should be available more. But that's not to say that they can all play at that consistent level. And you're also saying that, like, as long as all this goes, what if they have injuries at the same time? What if they only miss a couple of games each, but they're both out at the same time and you've just got one lad? I mean, it's a tough thing. And I don't trust that Liverpool have got the midfielders to go into this season to win the league and the Champions League. And that's what
the
aim
should
be.
Exactly. It's the same problem as the defense. It's exactly the same conversation as the defense thing. It's just that, you know, you are on paper. In your FIFA team and in your Footy Manager squad, I think Liverpool's squad is absolutely fine, in realistic terms, because I'm quite happy to I'm playing Curtis Jones more because I think he's earned it and I think he's got a massive ceiling and I want to see more Curtis Jones in midfield. I think that was a transition season for him and I think he handled it really well, but. We're not in that world. These are very much unknowns, and you do need to have extra cover, particularly because last season the big warning is you just don't know. It's been another summer of international tournaments on the back of the hardest ever season, and a season looming where you've got another international tournament in the middle. We still don't know what the Olympics is going to do to our squad as well. You know, in addition to that kind of stuff, so. Yeah, I agree. Like the defence thing, in an ideal world, I'd have another defender on top of the one we've bought, and I think we definitely need a midfielder. We've not even talked, Si, about goals.
Yeah.
You know, because that's the one more big one.
Yeah.
A lad who just puts the ball in the back of the net is the other big looming fear.
It is. There's question marks over Firmino, isn't there? I still love him. I still think he's capable of producing fantastic performances. He showed that a few times towards the end of the season. Man United away especially. But yeah, the question marks are there. Salah scored loads of goals last season. If he plays every game, he's going to score 20, 30 goals a season. He's done it three or four years in a row now. I think we do. We don't know what Mane's going to be like.
Yeah,
Mane was poor last season. He was by his standards, he was awful.
And it's funny because he's a perfect example of that. He ends up actually still probably one of the most prolific left wingers in world footy. But you're right. Again, this is why we're doing this. None of us have the actual answers, but we're talking about them. These are all the little gnawing doubts that exist in the back of our mind. Because in the worst case scenario, fatalist thinking leads you down the path of what if X, Y, and Z get injured? And we have these conversations every year, and they never normally come to fruition because that many players don't get injured. But last season was the one that fucking threw everything up in the air, and so I think we're right to have some more of these concerns. If ever there was a season to have one more and to go a little bit more, because Man City aren't asked. Fuck me, Man City are being linked with more £50 million fullbacks. Give it a rest. Well, so honestly, I've got this feeling right that Pep Guardiola was knocked back by a girl who played fullback at school, like the love of his life, who wouldn't have anything to do with him, played fullback. So he's trying to fill his life with fullbacks to kind of make up with it in later life. Now that he's rich and he can have whatever he wants, it's like when you get all these famous directors who put loads of like attractive women in the movies because they were geeks and they got knocked back loads. That's what Pep's doing. Just loves a fullback.
There's the AFCON thing. Talking about the forwards, there's the AFCON thing. Salah and Mane are going to be gone for a month or so.
So what are you left with?
You're left with Firmino, Jota,
and Harvey Elliott as your front three.
Origi probably goes. Shaqiri probably goes. But I think they're waiting on those sales to see who they're going to be able to afford to sign as a forward. But I think you should be signing a forward and then trying to get rid of the players because we're going to need them.
Yeah, 100%. Scott Hawks here.
I think what they should do is what everybody does when they get money out for a loan or something. They just get more on that Anfield Road extension for an extra player or two. You know what I mean? And everyone's going, it's for this, but I'm just going to get a little bit more out. Home improvements. And bye!
Yeah, definitely. Absolutely, yeah. Put an extra, stand. Yeah, just we're putting an extra special tier on the top that only real fans can see. What do you mean you can't see the third tier on the Anfield? So Scott talks in the Super Chat. Thank you, Scott. Hopefully Thiago will have a good run this season, but relying on Curtis to be our only Iron Man seems dangerous after a year of doing the same at the back. Yeah, I agree again. I think there's a very, very valid fear indeed. And, you know, it goes back to the thing is Harvey Elliott going to be ready to step up? You know, all of us, I think most of us, if not all of us, would accept Shaqiri and Origi moving on. And that's the point is they were there last season, they were available, and we still didn't use them. So we don't necessarily need them. But having one more lad who's definitely good enough to go in there, I think we'd all be much more relaxed about that kind of situation. There's a good comment earlier, which I wish I could find, but I've scrolled past, unfortunately, about that the Kane thing, saying City have had a 30-goal-a-season centre-forward, you know, for the last how many years. Kane's effectively just replacing Aguero in that squad, although to the point they didn't have him last season. So they should, and they won the league. So that's definitely something to be scared of. Let's all be scared. We're going to talk about Adrian's new contract. We're going to do this on the Reds transfer news show, which we've got streaming on the RedmenTV.com this afternoon. We did a little bit of it yesterday, Chris and I, but I think the overriding feeling is if it's their choice, Chris, fine. If it means his second choice, I can understand a little bit of concern.
I'm not asked if he is our second choice keeper if you guarantee me that Alisson's fit every game this season. But no one's going to be able to guarantee me, so I am asked, because if he is our second choice keeper, he's not good enough, unfortunately. I just don't know. Until I know what's happening with Kelleher, I can't tell you how I feel about Adrian being signed up for another year or whatever, because why would you? Kelleher's a better goalkeeper. Kelleher ousted Adrian as the number two last season in my eyes. You know, when it came to games played, Kelleher, I think, played more games than him, didn't he? You know, so, and you could see the potential that he's got, but equally, Jürgen isn't going to stand in the way of someone progressing as a footballer. And if a 22, 23-year-old lad wants to go and play football, that's actually also what Jürgen wants, because he wants him to improve. He wants him to be a better option in the future. He wants him to actually push Alisson, because he's not getting pushed by Adrian. He's literally just there in case he gets injured.
Yeah, well, that's it. And you want, Ben, you know, it'll seem counterintuitive, but if Keller's going to need, at some point he's going to need to play football matches to actually grow and get the experience. Being a goalkeeper is half experience. You know, it's agility and all that, but there's a reason why goalkeepers lose a little bit of that, but still are the best in the world in the 30s. But people still talk about Neuer and Buffon's still going. He's dropped down to Serie B, but he's because experience counts for a lot. Liverpool might have to weaken their goalkeeping situation this season to strengthen it next season, but that won't make us feel any comforted having to live through this season if they do that.
Yeah, and as Chris said, you know, if you could guarantee me that Alisson was going to be fit and none of this was relevant, then I wouldn't have a problem with any of this happening. For me, Adrian's made some high profile mistakes. But if he was in goal for a run of five or six games, I don't think I'd be too concerned. It's if Alisson gets himself injured for a 2-3 month period that it becomes a real problem for me, because I don't think that Adrian's got the consistency. I think you can shove him in goal for five or six games and say, look, just do the basics right, don't do anything daft, and you can get through that period. But then, you know, as you go through a real sustained spell of the season, you need him to be buying into the way that we play in order for the team to function how it should and what have you, then it becomes a little, and this is just the evolution of the goalkeeping position, because 10 years ago this wouldn't be an issue. You'd be able to have a backup goalkeeper in your side for 3-4 months, and because of the way that goalkeepers weren't necessarily attuned to the system and the way that they play with their feet and all of that, it wasn't as much of a problem. You know, you'd just be able to say, oh, shove him in goal, make me some saves, kick it dead far at goal kicks, and it won't be an issue. But now it's like a little bit more complicated than that with goalkeepers, because you want them to be able to, you know, play long passes like Ederson does, and you want them to be able to throw it more tactically and things like that. So I think that's the issue that we've got. If Alisson gets himself injured and he's out for like that spell that he was out for at the beginning of the title winning season, he picked up the injury at home to Norwich and he was out for ages, and I think he came back like late October. If you're talking about that long, that's where I'd be like, for Adrian. And so I think that's the decision that Klopp's got to make. Alisson, he's got to prepare. He's got to say, look, I've got to prepare for Alisson being out that long. And if that's the case, do I want Kelleher or do I want Adrian?
It's a whole summer of going, God, what happens if he gets injured again? I think that's been to summarise this show.
Go on. The mad thing is, we're going to have three goalkeepers, so the likelihood is, you know, it is going to be Kelleher and Adrian.
Yeah.
Because you can't go into the season with two goalkeepers.
Well, yeah.
Because what happens if you get an injury?
No, 100%. You definitely,
Do any of them, not even the first teamer?
Adrian still played games after Kelleher had been promoted to second choice because Kelleher got injured as well, and then Alisson's dad obviously died. Adrian was the one who came in because Kelleher was injured.
Yeah.
Your third choice keeper hopefully doesn't, but there's a good chance you have to play games.
It's just whether, I agree. And look, and the general rumblings are that it will be third choice. But yeah, we'll talk about this more on the Reds Transfer Roundup show, and we'll be talking about Florian Neuhaus as well. So if you want to have a little bit more of a chat about that, then do sign up to therevenanttv.com and check out that show. Right, we're going to be talking about the Jordan Henderson documentary because I've got Si and Ben here with me as well, who've been working away on this one to make it the best that it can possibly be. If you haven't seen the trailer for episode 2, we've got that for you right now, and then we'll have a good old chat about it in a second. See you in a sec.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am, but Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Settled in really quick. You could tell he was a real humble kid.
It was sad, but at the same time, if that's what they wanted to do, then fine.
Jordan Henderson would go to Fulham and Clint Dempsey would come to Liverpool.
Do I think that would have been the right decision? The answer would have been no.
Leaving Liverpool to go to Fulham? You wouldn't go, would you?
It never happened, so that's good.
That was the season when he truly arrived as a Liverpool player.
You just had Hendo that would provide the energy for the team.
We missed him immensely in them final few games, for sure.
You've got some bad news. It's what I thought you had. You've got cancer. Well, I can't remember much after that. Win the league and get every man of the match every week. That's what you need to do.
I think it was the ideal choice.
I couldn't see how they could do anything other than give him the captaincy once he played the way he played.
What a feeling that must have been for Jordan.
I don't see that Jordan changed, you know, because he had the armband.
That whole run-up all the way to Kiev was so good because I think it was unexpected.
I would be a Champions League winner, yeah.
It was a tough night for all of us, for him as well.
It's at times like that when Jordan Henderson really comes to the fore.
We wouldn't be the team that we are today without that game.
I think then it felt like the next time it was going to be ours.
Hey everyone, welcome back. Yes, episode 2 of the Jordan Henderson documentary series that we have made for you guys, Hendo 10 Years of Red, is on a early release right now on the RedmenTV.com for Club Legends. It's going out to all subscribers on the RedmenTV.com on Wednesday. Hopefully everyone's checked out the first episode, but I've got Si, who has been the lion's share of the work on this project in the studio. Si, it's been... I think it's fair to say it's the biggest thing you've ever made, it's the biggest thing we've ever made.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. It's been enormous. The amount of interviews, the amount of work that's gone in, the amount of editing that's gone in, the amount of pre-production planning that it's gone in. Yeah, it's by far the biggest thing we've ever done, and I'd like to think it's the best as well.
I'm so made up. I mean, Ben, you'll have seen this as well. Like the response to episode one, because for people who obviously don't kind of know what we've been doing, this the three of us have kind of been doing it. Si's been doing the vast majority of it and pulling it all together. Ben and I have done a lot of the interviews along the way, but the reception to that first episode has been unreal.
Yeah, and I think it's just the level of detail that we've got into. You know, obviously we've gone and spoken to his old coaches and his dad, and we've gotten those like little stories around his childhood and playing football. He used to play for a club called Fulwell Juniors up in Sunderland, and you know we managed to speak and get some experiences of how, you know, that players from that club, it's kind of a feeder club almost to get into the Sunderland Academy. So we went up and we spoke to Jed McNamee, who still runs the Sunderland Academy. We went up and we had a chat with him about Jordan's experiences, and you learn about the difficulties that he had kind of developing physically when he was a teenager. So, you know, Jed was saying that when he kind of got to 15, 16, he wasn't quite having the impact on games that he was when he was, you know, a young kid, and they were worried about whether he would actually make it at the time. And obviously, you know, eventually he does and he plays for Sunderland, and the rest, as they say, is history. But as I say, just to have that whole first episode on his life before Liverpool, I think is really interesting for people, because everybody knows the Liverpool stuff. Everybody knows, you know, and there's some really interesting content in and little snippets of things in episodes 2 and 3. But, you know, that for a lot of people, episode 1 will have been brand new content for them, and they've been learned about Henderson. And I think that's why it's been such a good reception.
Well, it was even really interesting for me. I don't know if you'd say the same, finding out about it while we were making it. Like all the little things, hearing these little stories. And as each person tells you something different, you're painting the bigger picture, and then you think, oh, I want to find out more about that. And then you ask the next person about it, and you're painting the bigger picture for it. Like an example for that is the video, which is now famous, which we showed him a couple of years ago, of him like doing the skills with his mates just on the streets. And he told us a couple of years ago it was his mates' media project. But then the fact that his coaches at Sunderland are telling him about that, saying we were just training one day and then someone was passing this video around of him doing the skills, and they were made up with it, and they were saying it shows that not only like it is he you know, he's got a love of football, and it's a passion. It's showing the character he's got as well, and all that kind of stuff. Soccer AM went into the academy, and he did the skill school thing against a lad called Nathan Luscombe. And they were saying at the time it looked like Nathan Luscombe was going to be the more talented player. He actually won the skill school thing, but he ended up not making a great career in football, whereas Jordan's obviously gone on to what he achieved. And just learning all them things and then obviously piecing the story together to tell to people who are watching it, it's been an amazing experience, to be honest.
You're right, I think the thing that's been most interesting about it, is how many people said yes. Like, you know, we're working on a separate project, which I don't really want to go too much into, but something I've said in writing about it is that football is an industry of no's, or maybe later or whatever. But moreover, you get none. People see the good things that we get down the years, and they go, oh, it's this, but it is a infinitesimally small fraction of compared to everything else that you have to do in and around it. I mean, the name, let's just go through it if you don't mind. Yeah. The names that are actually
So Trent Alexander-Arnold, Kenny Dalglish, Steven Gerrard, Jamie Carragher, Gareth Southgate, his dad Brian, we've got his old coaches from Sunderland, we've got Lucas Leiver, who we've already got a fairly good relationship with anyway. There's probably some more I'm thinking, but then you've got journalists like Mel Reddy, James Pearce, Simon Hughes. You've got Chelsea Grimes, who's brilliant. All just we asked them, we're doing this on Henderson, and they were just like, "Yep, I'll do it. No problem whatsoever." There was a little bit of work getting the contact for them people, but as soon as we asked the question, everyone we asked was interested. Pretty much everyone.
Well, that's it. I mean, there's a few omissions, and then not for the lack of trying, but obviously there's some that were just conflicting schedules, and I think at times people working at other football clubs were harder to get. But Peter Moore's a really good example from my experience.
Peter Moore, of course.
I was sat in an afternoon. thinking, oh, I could actually do with him just to talk about the because he was at EA Sports when Jordan got that was the FIFA cover star, and I kind of wanted to just get his take on that. And I dropped him a DM, and he was like, "Yeah, when?" I was like, "Tomorrow." Yeah, no problem.
Yeah.
And like within 24 hours, Peter Moore is you know, and he's on a I think he's like a 7 hour time difference now to us or whatever. So he was getting up at it was like 8 o'clock in the morning or something for him to put his the time aside to talk about it. And I mean, Ben, just in terms of the people you spoke, like you did the Gareth Southgate interview, which is I think is that's the one for me because. I think Gerrard was probably the most... Gerrard and Klopp are the biggest getting and Carragher
I didn't even mention Jürgen Klopp when I went through that list of people.
But but they're all Liverpool connected. Gareth Southgate is the one... I remember watching the trailer back when you fished and Gareth Southgate crops up and it's like, oh, Christ. It's like, he's the England manager.
Yeah.
And I know he's not as held in this, you know, in the same sort of esteem as previously, but he's literally the national team manager, and he took time aside to contribute towards it.
I know, and I think he actually said it himself. I mean, it was a massive moment for me to sit where Si's sitting now and be chatting to the England manager. It was just insane, and it was also mad because that was around to give people an insight into how long we've been working on this. That was around the time that all the Super League stuff was going on. So like the world of football was in an anarchy, and Gareth Southgate, the England manager, was still sat, you know, happy to make time. And he said it himself. He's got Jordan has so much respect from everybody that he works with within football, and I think that's why so many people have said yes. They're always happy to talk about Jordan because of their experience that they've had with him, working with him, speaking to him in his ears as a player and as a person, the leadership qualities that they've got, but also, you know, the way that he connects with people clearly on a human level. You know, and he talked about when, because we were talking about at the time with the work he's done off the pitch and the influences he's got, but also the story breaking around that time around the Super League was that, you know, he was trying to gather all the captains to have that meeting about what they were going to do with it. And Gareth mentioned that in one of his answers. He was saying he's just got that influence within the game when anybody would just drop anything to do it with him. And I think, you know, for people like that, Gareth Southgate, he's preparing for a massive international tournament at that time. He's got a lot of squad selection headaches and things like that. He's happy to do a nice interview like that for a change. He's probably dropped on his lap by the press officer for the FA, who was brilliant with us as well. And he's gone, oh, you know what, I will do that. And you know what I mean? And that is just the type of person the impact that Jordan's made on everybody around him in the industry.
Steven Gerrard's another great example of that as well. We did it, got in touch with Rangers, and he was up in Glasgow at the time. But it was pretty much, I think, the week they were winning the league that week,
yeah.
And Gerrard sat down and gave 15 minutes of his time to answer our questions. We couldn't go up because obviously COVID rules and stuff. But Rangers sat him down. We sent a list of
and
questions.
Filmed it really nice for us.
Sent it across to us. So that's Rangers taking time as well. Sunderland have been absolutely fantastic with us. Oscar Chamberlain, who's the media officer for Sunderland, has been unbelievable. And it's just been great how people have taken the time for not an awful lot of benefit for themselves to do it, to help us, because they know that we're shining a light on Jordan as a person and a player, and they want to help to do that.
What's been your favourite interview?
It'd have to be Kenny. Kenny Dalglish coming into the office and spending a couple of hours with us. It couldn't be anything else. I know we've done a few others over Skype again for COVID restrictions, but for Kenny to come in, we told the office was COVID safe and we followed all the restrictions and all that kind of thing. For him to come in and take a couple of hours out of his time was just an unbelievable experience. He's my hero, even though I'm too young to remember him playing. He's for what he's done for this football club. He's my hero, and to spend that time, and also his interview was fantastic as well.
Yeah, I like there's a couple for me. I've enjoyed all of them, to be perfectly honest. But like there's two, the Klopp one for the start, because I just loved chatting to Jürgen Klopp, and it was funny because he'd obviously done a bunch of stuff, and he apparently said it was his favourite one to do, which is fucking amazing. Like, you know, when he obviously just he's sitting down in a room, and Liverpool would actually Liverpool LFC TV were really good to shoot that, and they set two camera angles up on it, so it looks fantastic as well. Just put a massive smile on my face because again, he's obviously, you know, obviously you know the other ones people were talking to him about, like the season, and the season's been a bit crap. So to get Jürgen talking talking about the good stuff and his favourite memories, and he talks about like Jordan Henderson, about how he's had a cob on because he's been playing centre-half, and how he just goes, he's been phoning Jordan's wife to like say, just let me know if he comes back in a bad mood, because I find it dead funny. I'd done the interview and I watched it back when I was away last week. I was sat in a restaurant outside on my own with this on, and I snort laughed in the middle of a restaurant of like, because it made me laugh. And the other one was Trent, which was, you know, he's a professional footballer. That could have been 5 minutes, 10 minutes of just, he's dead good, he's whatever. It was like an hour.
Yeah.
And he gave these incredible,
passionate, like with a smile on his face, like the amount of things where he says, and you'll see a lot more of him in the second and third episodes. Obviously, the stuff that we're talking about in the first episode, Trent hasn't got that much to do with. Yeah. So there's a couple of little bits in there. But the second and third episodes, Trent plays a massive part in them, and he's fantastic.
Yeah, no, yeah, absolutely. That was one of the ones that was just genuinely, genuinely brilliant.
You can't hold the camera still, though.
No one can. Professional footballers are not great with framing. We'll definitely say that. Him and Lucas.
Put it on a table, Trent. So the entire time, I'm like, put it on a coffee table, for God's sake.
Yeah, he did. But yeah, given all told, I'll definitely take what he gave us. But I think the brilliant thing to be pointed out, you're right, because there's loads to come. Because obviously, episode one, as you mentioned, is very. It's the early years of Jordan. So, you know, if you're a Liverpool fan and you want to know more about the Liverpool stuff, then I think that's the really exciting thing, because I've seen episode two now. Episode three is in the works as we speak. What's brilliant about it, obviously, we put episode one out for free so everyone could check that out on YouTube. Episodes two and three are exclusive to our streaming service, because obviously we want to be able to do this stuff more for you guys. So obviously we have to find a way to fund it, of course, but there's tons of content on there. But I think that's really cool. You know, we've mentioned the Trent stuff. There's more from Trent. There's more from Klopp. There's more from Stevie. There's more from Carra. There's more from Kenny, because we're now entering in two, he's just signed for Liverpool, and it runs up until Kiev.
So he signs for Liverpool. You've got Carragher and Kenny telling the story about what he's like when he first came in. You've got the struggles of the first season. You've got 13-14 when he really starts to come into his own. We've got Gerrard talking about the 13-14 season, and then onto Kiev. Trent's recollections of the stories around Kiev, talking about the city and the Roma games, fantastic. And his dad. I mentioned that Kenny was probably my favourite interview, but Brian's just been unbelievable with us. You know, he invited us up to Sunderland to his house, and we sat with him for a good 2 or 3 hours. We were sat with him for. You could see how happy he was telling the stories, and he was showing us all the old photos. He's got a couple of Jordan's old shirts that he's showing us from famous games and stuff like that. And it was just amazing that Brian's taking the time to speak to us. And you know everyone knows the stories that have gone on with, you know, Brian was ill and stuff like that. He told us those kind of stories. He told us the stories of him getting down onto the pitch at the end of the Champions League final in Madrid, which, you know, I'm sure everyone will be looking forward to watching him recite that.
This is the thing, because I could sit and I could tell you the story of Jordan Henderson. You know, in a broader stroke, most of us could, because, you know, we've been at Liverpool for 10 years and we love him, you know, and we can tell you the high points and the low points, and it's got all that in. You know, we've got the Clint Dempsey stuff is in episode two, you know, of him nearly being made as make weight for Clint Dempsey, which is mad, and getting the recollections of the people around at the time for that.
Yeah, you've got Carragher and Gerrard talking about the views on that, and I think they're quite vocal about whether they think that would have been a good idea or not. Yeah. Spoilers, they don't think it would have been a good idea. if we swapped Jordan Henderson for Clint Dempsey.
Yeah. So like, and this is the thing about this, it's not just us telling them. We've got, you know, I did the Klopp the first 3 years of Klopp documentary on my channel, and it was just me telling the story with some punctuated with some bits and pieces. But it's being told by the people who've got first hand experience, and that's what stands it apart from everything else. It's got, you know, you're getting first-hand insight. I mean, that's why, you know, it's eras. So that's why episode one is very Sunderland focused. Episode two, you know, again, Carragher's a big part of this one. You mentioned that Gerrard, Kenny Dalglish is a massive part of this one. And then just looking ahead to next week, Trent will come into his own even more in that.
Jürgen,
of course.
There's the Barcelona stuff, which is the part that I'm actually in the middle of editing now that I'm going to be getting back to after finishing this podcast. You've got Henderson gets injured in the first half of the Barcelona game, and you've got half-time at Barcelona, we've got Trent and Jürgen telling the stories of that. and telling the stories about what got said, Trent telling the story of obviously the corner and stuff like that. We had to get that in, yeah. Even though it's not strictly Henderson focused. We've got to ask Trent about that when we're talking about the Barcelona game, haven't we? And then onto the Madrid final, we've got the celebrations, got onto winning the league. Episode two is kind of like heartbreak centered in a way. It's quite an emotional
episode. Empire Strikes Back of the trilogy.
Yeah.
Where it's got the most, like, I think it's got the most, you're right, it's got the real emotional core to it. So episode one's the early days, episode two is the armband, and we're talking like the glory of for episode three. So it's a ride that we're taking people on, you know, and that's why I love it the most. It's as warts and all as you can almost be. There's no punches pulled. We've got people talking about the really hard times that he's gone through, and also the Man City sending off. Don't pull the punches on that. How important he was to Liverpool to get into a stage to win the league, and then not winning the league is a lot, centered around those stuff. So, and obviously the heartbreak of Kip, but also what a great story it was in getting there. And
it's the heartbreak that makes his story so fascinating. Like you've got players who get to the top of football and stay there, and great story. But it's the fact of what he's been through to get there. He's been doubted by pretty much everyone, whether it's fans, other players, managers, and he's been through hard times, personal outside of football. He's been losing finals, losing leagues. But then it makes it all the better when he gets that glory and gets to lift the trophies at the end of it.
And spoilers, in some regards, he's just won an MBE, which is definitely meant there's a big way of scrabbling around to get episode three boxed. Yeah. I actually messaged him congratulations, but did say that, you know, we've now got a good ending on it, but if he happens to score a screamer against Scotland on Friday, then it might mean a little bit more scrabbling around as well. So we'll have to see on that. Just want to say, if you guys have checked out episode one so far and you're sitting on the fence and you want to know more insight into some of the brilliant Liverpool moments, I can't. You know, we've made it, so I do have to say, but also I can't stress how this is levels above anything we've ever done, anyone on YouTube has ever done, particularly in the football space. Fantastic. And it's worth mentioning, we're talking about these interviews. They're all going to be getting released on the website as well. So
and they're all fascinating. The one that we spoke about is Kevin Ball's interview.
Yeah.
You know, he's a Sunderland coach. It's the kind of thing that if you're a Liverpool fan, you'll look at it and you'll go, oh yeah, I want to watch Klopp, I want to watch Trent, I want to watch Kenny, all this. But the Kevin Ball interview is absolutely fascinating. Yeah. It's about 40 minutes long, and he speaks so well, and he's funny, and he's passionate. You can see how proud he is that he's worked with Jordan. You can see how much time he's still got for him. He speaks about the time that Jordan still actually got for him as well. It's an unbelievable interview. That's worth the subscription alone, and then everything else added to it.
And that's the point about this is, again, I know this is a bit sort of salesy and all that, but obviously it has to be. You guys who watch us for free on YouTube are amazing, and thank you so much for doing that, of course. But what we do above and beyond on the RedmanTV.com, it is our streaming platform. It is a Netflix for Liverpool fans that we're trying to build for you guys. We've got some great content on there anyway, but the content drop that we're just putting out over the next few weeks. So episode one went out alongside Klopp, Kevin Ball, and Bolo Zenden.
Obviously, we didn't want to release too much of the Liverpool stuff because it kind of spoils the later episodes.
Right now, episode two is on early release for Club Legend subscribers, which is our top tier, but it's available to all the subscribers from Wednesday. But that's Jamie Carragher,
Lucas Leiva, and Mel Reddy. Another unbelievable interview.
Did you want to expand on that, Ben?
Well, she's just very energetic. You can tell she really loves him. And obviously, you know, I did that interview. And obviously, like, when you do an interview, obviously you're trying to like bounce off what she's saying, and you know, but you've got a list of questions, and we were getting a bit short for time. And I've now watched the interview back, and I've watched the episode of documentary. She's so animated with everything that she says. She's so enthusiastic about what she's talking about, and you just end up so engrossed in what she's saying because she's passionate about it. You know what I mean? And it happens with anybody, you know, it might be happening with what we're doing here. Anybody listening to this podcast, when anybody's talking about something they're passionate about, you just want to listen to them say more. And I think out of all of them, you could tell that she possibly had the most love for him out of all the journalists and media people that we interviewed. And I don't know whether that, you know, she didn't go into any detail. I don't know whether like they've had, you know, some kind of like she said that he'd helped her out with a few things in the past, and you know, that they obviously had a communication stuff. So I don't know whether they got a bit of a friendship. But yeah, she was real. She had a real interest in what he was doing.
That was something she made clear. Yeah. She said, honestly, the amount of times that he's just got in touch with me asking if I'm okay, saying stuff like when the lockdown was going on last year, obviously Mel's from South Africa, saying that he knew that she will have been pretty much at home while her family are in South Africa. She's worrying about her family and the situation over there. And Jordan just got in touch with her and saying, are you okay? How are you getting on? And
he's brilliant, mate. He's just absolutely unreal. Yeah, and just I can throw that in the comments to say, like, stop spoilers. Look, I mean, we're not doing spoilers. We just you all know the big points of Jordan's life because you've been a Liverpool fan, I guess. But you know, just in terms of what the content is coming out. So yeah, we've got those three. That's bonus content that's going out. So obviously, you've got the episodes. If you want them on early release, become a Club Legend subscriber. If you just want them on the Wednesdays, that's absolutely cool. Just go and sign up. It's £5 a month for your standard subscription on the redmentv.com. Next week, we've got, I mean, still to come, by the way, I think some of this is still to be finalised, but in terms of the full interviews that haven't gone out yet, that will be going out over the next few weeks, Kenny's still got to come out.
Yeah, so next week we've got Kenny, we've got Peter Moore, and we've got someone else as well.
Yeah, we've got Gerard and Trent still to come. Yeah. And then there's a few others like
Jeb McNamee, who was one of his coaches, Sunderland, who Ben mentioned before. We sat down with him for a good 45 minutes, loads of great stories from him.
I would say, you know, we've done this in the past where like 20 minutes with Jurgen Klopp is like the biggest thing we've ever done. We've got that, and I'm almost concerned that we're like, oh, what else? We've got an interview with Jurgen Klopp. We've got a 20-minute exclusive interview with Jurgen Klopp, and it's the best thing. It's made me so extraordinarily happy. So all of those things are coming out over the next few weeks. So yeah, if you want to go and sign up, then please do. If you need to keep yourself tidied over, obviously plenty of football to keep you entertained with the Euros, but if you want to have a nice old reminisce, feel some good feelings, then do go and check out Hendo 10 Years of Red.
And do leave a comment as well, please. Actually, if you're watching it on the website, there's a comment section there, and it'd be lovely to hear your comments and your thoughts on the episode, because obviously we are putting a lot of time into it, and the comments that we get back, they won't make it all worthwhile, and knowing that people have watched it and enjoyed it. So yeah, if you watch it, then please leave a comment for me, please.
100%. Yeah, Si's been travelling the length and breadth of the country getting this done. He's now been locked in a room for the last 3 weeks straight. We've let him out to come and do this. Like, so if you want to support Si for all the hard work he's doing, then yeah, please do go and check it out on the redmentv.com. Episode 1 and 2 are streaming right now if you're a Club Legend. But Wednesdays is when the normal content drop is over on there. And we've got the Reds Transfer Roundup show that we're talking about. We've got weekly shows going out for you guys in the interim, so plenty to keep you entertained. Thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure. I'm dead excited for episode 3 now. Can't wait to see the feedback on episode 2, and then dead excited for episode 3 because I've not seen that at all yet. It's going to be an absolute belter because, yeah, some spoilers. It's got all the trophies. So yeah, that should be pretty good. But thank you so much for joining us on the podcast this week. You guys are absolutely amazing. Hope you have a fantastic day. The podcast will return next week, and we'll see it all very, very soon. Ta-ra.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.